The latest labor report has good and bad news about Montana's economy. Good evening, I'm Sarah Jovetich.
And I'm Courtney Anderson, and Capitol reporter Dan Boyce has our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
We also tell you about new lightning-sparked fires in Yellowstone and Idaho. And in our feature interview, News Director Sally Mock talks with a Cuban journalist about efforts to preserve historic Havana. Montana's economy has been growing faster than expected. That's according to this year's Labor Day economic report from the State Department of Labor and Industry. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce speaks with State Labor Commissioner Pam Busey about the report released today, which Montana's unemployment rate remains 2 percentage points below the national average.
The data in this year's Labor Day report comes from 2012, and last year, the economy grew 2.3%. That's more than a full point higher than the average long-term growth rate.
The predictions prior to 2012 were that the economy was not going to improve as swiftly as it did, that we were going to have a very slow improvement.
Labor Commissioner Pam Busey says the growth has been led by the private sector.
Private sector is adding jobs. Starting to balance out now how quickly the government and the public sector is shedding jobs.
And that private sector growth is happening primarily in healthcare, mining, leisure activities, and trade, especially.
Healthcare has grown exponentially. And those jobs are higher paying jobs. The average healthcare job, and I can't quote it directly, is over $40,000 in Montana.
She says the state still does have its challenges. She believes the economy would be further improved by helping the state's Native American workers and other disadvantaged populations, by ensuring equal pay for women, and by working hard to develop the state's younger workforce, to develop training opportunities that fit the changing job market. Because Busey says our workers are aging.
We have the highest level of workers over 65 working in the workforce of anywhere in the country. So it will be not today and maybe not tomorrow, but it will be a pretty significant issue.
Latest figures put the unemployment rate at about 5.3% now. The Labor Day report does predict that rate will continue to fall through the next year. It is a positive economic sign, yet Busey points out economists actually do not like to see the unemployment rate fall too far.
Once you have unemployment down around 4% or under 4%, it means you aren't able to find the workers that you need.
That's a problem Montana will deal with if it gets there. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
And in other news from around the state, an algae bloom and a fast-moving storm combined to kill at least 10,000 Kokanee salmon in Lake Coconusa in northwestern Montana. State fisheries biologist Mike Hensler tells the Missoulian recent hot, calm weather caused the water on top of the lake to warm, allowing algae to bloom. The Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks says a storm on Sunday brought strong winds that moved the algae deeper into the water, where it was ingested by salmon. FWP spokesman John Fraley says the fish became disoriented after ingesting toxic blue-green algae and came to the surface. They were unable to dive back into cooler water and were killed by the warm surface water. Fraley says the die-off of the 8 to 10-inch salmon affected a small portion of what will be next year's adults.
A new wildfire has started in Yellowstone National Park, but officials report no issues with any of the fires burning in the park. Storms yesterday brought rain to the Alum Fire, burning about 5 miles northwest of Fishing Bridge Junction. However, the storms also were accompanied by lightning that started at least one new fire about a mile away. The National Park Service says more than 700 lightning strikes occurred in the park yesterday afternoon, so additional fire starts are expected. Dry, warmer weather also is expected this weekend. All park roads and major tourist facilities are open. The 5 fires that have been burning in the park this week have shown little activity and are just being monitored.
Lightning also touched off 3 new large fires in Idaho. Meanwhile, firefighters have nearly surrounded 2 massive south-central Idaho blazes, the Beaver Creek and Elk Complex fires, that once threatened communities, including Sun Valley, and kept them busy for much of the month. Beaver Creek and Elk Complex are expected to be contained this weekend. Among the new blazes, the Raft Fire along the Snakes River Brownlee Reservoir, 20 miles north of Midvale, has expanded to about 2 square miles, while the nearby Hell's Canyon fire was at 4 square miles as it burned through light fuels.
It's the start of a long Labor Day weekend, and that means a lot of people will be outdoors celebrating this unofficial end to summer. Fire officials hope everyone has a good time, but also urges extreme caution with fire. Lolo Creek Complex Fire Information Officer Mike Cole says it may not even be worth the risk to mess around with campfires this weekend.
We're still in stage one restrictions. So that means in developed campgrounds, you can have a campfire, and that's about it. And at this point in the summer, the way the weather's been, it's going to be turning to hotter and drier weather. Myself, I wouldn't even consider having a campfire, even in a campground right now.
And if you do start a fire in an approved campground fire ring, it must be completely extinguished and cool to the touch before you leave the site. That now almost 11,000-acre Lolo complex has cost millions of dollars to suppress. It is now about 75% contained. Cole says the lines on that incident's rugged north flank will almost certainly be tested this evening.
Well, we had winds that were predicted with the red flag warning. They've actually picked up. They were gusting downslope about 18 miles an hour. So we're expecting that to increase as the day goes through with gusts as high as 30 miles an hour. So that'll be a real test on those fire lines on the north side of the fire. They were in there early this morning working to mop up. They've taken a lot of hose and pumps in there, and they have a lot of water lays. They actually got some mop up done yesterday, and they were trying to get some additional mop up done before the wind started. And as you know, when those winds pick up, that's a dangerous place to be because those weakened trees can start going down. So I would guess that at some point in time this afternoon, they may pull back from those lines until the wind dies down.
BPA's high-voltage power line remains in the fire's path, about 1.5 miles north of the fire line.
Sealy Swan Search and Rescue is resuming its search for a Great Falls man missing in Placid Lake, southwest of the town of Sealy Lake. Missoula County Deputy Bob Parcell told KECI-TV the search for 69-year-old Delray Sayman is to resume tomorrow morning. Rescue teams from Flathead Lake and Missoula counties will join the search along with two search dogs. Sayman has been missing since taking his boat out on Placid Lake at about 3:30 p.m. on August 25th. 23rd. Lake County officials say dog alerted researchers to the area where the body of a 36-year-old Huson was recovered in Flathead Lake. The body of Nathan Bird was found in 77 feet of water yesterday by searchers using sonar. He went missing on August 25th.
A Hamilton man has been sentenced to 10 years in prison after pleading no contest to negligent homicide in the November 2012 death of his wife after an apparent drunken argument in a motel room. The Ravalli Republic reports District Judge James Haynes rejected a plea agreement that called for 48-year-old Douglas C. Reynolds to be sentenced to 20 years with the Department of Corrections, with 15 suspended. Reynolds conferred with his attorney yesterday before accepting the sentence of 20 years in prison with 10 suspended. Court records say Reynolds told investigators he and Jessica Hawkins had been drinking and arguing on November 10th when he snapped and struck her in the left temple with his elbow. Hawkins was unresponsive the next morning. Physicians determined she was brain dead.
A Missoula man charged in a December home invasion in which a Dixon man was stabbed to death and his wife's throat was cut has apparently reached a plea agreement with Sanders County prosecutors. The Missoulian reports Nathan Lee William Calvert's September 15th trial date has been vacated and change of plea hearing is set for September 17th. Public defender Stephen Eschenbacher has said two mental health evaluations supported his argument that Calvert suffers from a mental disease or defect and lacked the intent to commit a crime. Calvert was charged with deliberate homicide in the December 6th death of 61-year-old Doug Morgeau and with attempted deliberate homicide of Cheryl Morgeau, whose throat was cut. Prosecutors say Calvert told investigators he was high on synthetic marijuana or spice when he broke into the house.
The prosecutor in the case of a North Dakota man whose conviction for conspiracy to kill a Montana man was overturned by the state Supreme Court says he's trying to figure out his next step. The ruling issued yesterday allows the state to charge Cody Borner with another crime, but McLean County State's Attorney Ladd Erickson said today he's still analyzing the opinion. The jury last summer found Borner of Stanton and Richard Whitman of Hazen guilty of two counts, each of conspiracy to commit murder in the death of Mike Padilla of Billings, Montana. The court says Borner was accused of a crime that is not defined in North Dakota law. Erickson says the high court ruling, in effect, changed the law from what it was when the case was charged.
A former correctional facilities nurse is charged with trying to tamper with witnesses in her rape case. The Montana Standard reports 45-year-old Trisha Brunel of Anaconda is charged with felony solicitation to tamper with witnesses. Her bond was revoked. Anaconda Deer Lodge County prosecutors charged Brunel with having sexual contact with three inmates while she worked at facilities that treated people convicted of felony DUIs and those facing return to prison for violating parole. She pleaded not guilty in March to four counts of felony sexual intercourse without consent, six counts of felony transfer of illegal articles, and 43 misdemeanor counts of unauthorized communications. The new charge filed in late July alleges Brunel contacted one of the victims and tried to get him to convince a witness to change his testimony.
A third defendant has been sentenced in a case where five roommates allegedly conspired to rob a Missoula convenience store to help pay their rent. District Judge John Larson sentenced 20-year-old Ika Ika Kamaka to 2 years of intensive supervision for his role in the January 8th robbery. Prosecutors alleged Kamaka went into the store to purchase tea and ensure the register would open for three other men entering the store. Two beat the clerk with baseball bats, fracturing his skull, and left with a cash register containing $90. Court records say the clerk bought the tea for Kamaka, a regular customer. Kamaka pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit robbery. He was sentenced to 7 years with the Department of Corrections, with five suspended, in order to contribute $6,700 in restitution for the clerk's lost wages.
A Polson police officer who was recently ordered to undergo ethics training and a chemical dependency evaluation by the board that certifies law enforcement officers is on paid leave while officers investigate an off-duty incident at a Polson bar. Police Chief Wade Nash says he asked Missoula County to investigate Corey Anderson and the assault reported at a Polson bar on Saturday night. Anderson was recently investigated by the Montana Public Safety Officer Standards and Training Council over several alcohol-related incidents dating back to 2002, including a car crash, domestic abuse, and being kicked out of a bar for public intoxication. He was ordered by post in December to attend ethics training and comply with any recommendations of the chemical dependency evaluator. A phone number listed for Anderson in Big Arms was disconnected.
A 56-year-old Condon woman is charged with aggravated cruelty to animals after Missoula police found a dozen decomposing cats in a residence she abandoned. The Missoulian reports Rebecca Quirn appeared in justice court yesterday. She was released without bond but cannot own any pets. Prosecutors say Quirn's sister told police that Quirn had abandoned her residence several months ago, leaving a number of cats. Sergeant Travis Welch says Quirn gave police permission to enter the residence on Wednesday. Court records said she told investigators she was suffering from depression and abandoned her house because, quote, she couldn't take it anymore, unquote. Officers say they were met with an unbearable odor when they opened the house. They put on protective suits and masks and found the decaying skeletons of about 12 cats.
The Montana Department of Livestock has confirmed at least 9 cases of West Nile virus in Montana horses over the past week, leading to the deaths of 5 of the animals. State veterinarian Marty Zalewski said today that 3 of the horses are expected to recover from the mosquito-borne illness, while the last was still being treated. 8 of the infected horses had not been vaccinated, and 1 was not current in its shots. Zalewski encourages horse owners to consider a booster vaccine, which could help provide protection in as soon as a week. West Nile fever symptoms include loss of appetite, depression, fever, weakness of hind limbs, muscle twitching, convulsions, and inability to swallow. The cases were reported in Cascade, Blaine, Phillips, McCone, Custer, Petroleum, Muscle Shell, Bighorn, and Stillwater counties.
U.S. Attorney Mike Cotter says a new federal marijuana policy doesn't undermine his 3-year crackdown on large pot providers. The Justice Department said yesterday it will allow states to regulate marijuana as long as they keep it from kids, the black market, and federal property. The new policy comes 3 months after Cotter's office wrapped up its investigation with its 33rd marijuana provider conviction. That, plus a strict 2011 overhaul of the state's medical marijuana law, has caused the demise of a once booming medical marijuana industry. Cotter said today the new policy still calls for enforcement of the Federal Controlled Substance Act, and it would not have changed his investigation. However, he says legalized recreational use in Colorado and Washington will create opportunities for trafficking from those states into Montana.
The Milk River Ranch property purchased by the state in December has a new name and interim management rules that allow hunting and hiking, but no camping, fossil collecting, or commercial use. The 2,992-acre property purchased by the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks for $4.7 million, along with about 6,000 acres of adjacent school trust land, is now called the Lost River Wildlife Management Area. FWP Wildlife Program Manager Mark Sullivan said yesterday the agency already has a Milk River WMA. The Lost River is a tributary to the Milk River located on the property, which is about 45 miles northwest of Havre. Sullivan says a working group will be formed this winter to develop a long-term management plan for the land.
Officials with an Idaho company say wolves are suspected of killing 8 of its sheep on a public land grazing allotment in Wyoming during the past 10 days. The sheep are owned by the Sitaway Sheep Company, which is based in Territon, Idaho. It is the same company that reported losing 176 sheep nearby in Idaho 2 weeks ago after wolves caused the herd to stampede and crush each other. The 8 sheep killed in Wyoming were located on a grazing allotment in the Bridger-Teton National Forest south of Hoback Junction. J.C. Sitaway tells the Jackson Hole News and Guide that the company has had wolf problems there for about 5 years. Wyoming Game and Fish Department officials are investigating.
A Cuban historic preservation expert and journalist is in Montana this week, speaking about the effort to restore historic buildings in Havana. Magda Reisek Aguirre is the director of communications for the City Historian of Havana and also the creator of Havana Radio. In tonight's feature interview, Aguirre talks with news director Sally Mock about the effort to preserve a city that was founded in the 16th century. The translator is University of Montana professor Rafael Chacon.
Havana is very important as a city because it is the place, the center, where all of the treasures of the New World were compiled or grouped before they were shipped back to Europe. So the port of Havana was the place where the fleet, the Spanish fleet, the Indies fleet, would gather before it returned to Europe. So they took advantage of the currents of the Gulf of Mexico. So Havana became very, very quickly the most important city in the Caribbean. In fact, it was known as the key to the Caribbean.
So many of the buildings have deteriorated since then, and there is this massive restoration project, I understand, going on that began, I think, in the early 90s, really quite seriously. And I read that over 1,000 buildings have been restored so far. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Es cierto lo que dice. En 1993.
It was in 1993 that a special decree was issued by the government to give this project its autonomy in order to raise its own funding in order to restore the old city. So our major efforts are, in fact, to reinvest those funds into the restoration of the old city.
And where did the funds come from?
Provienen de los ingresos.
So some 80% of those come from tourism. And 20% are international contributions and projects. As you know, in 1982, UNESCO declared Old Havana as part of its World Heritage. And even though that doesn't necessarily translate into a funding source, it does give the project great visibility globally. And it's that global visibility that has actually triggered a positive response from partners around the world.
Explain to me, Magda, the value of preservation versus raising the buildings, building a bunch of high-rises, and turning the city into the heart of the city into a more modern, quote, modern mm-hmm. city.
Si siempre hay que respetar un diálogo entre
we have to balance the preservation of the old city and providing amenities that modernity offers us. But our primary mission is, in fact, to restore and to save those historic structures. The majority of these buildings are over 400 years old. Not only do we attempt to rescue these buildings, to save them so that they can be admired, but that they can be inhabited. Because the historic center of Havana has 70,000 inhabitants, which gives us a huge social responsibility. Our project entails a community-based cooperation.
I want to talk now, if I may, a bit about your career in journalism in Cuba and the state of journalism in Cuba. You run a radio station, and I think you also do some television work. Mm-hmm. And the radio station is primarily an arts and cultural program.
Arts, cultural, and heritage. We call our radio station Havana Radio, the voice of the Cuban heritage. It broadcasts to all Cuba because the heritage is a matter of everybody in Cuba. And we have some important cities that was founded for Spanish people in Cuba. And our message is important for that people that live in that cities, that old cities.
Do you have any restrictions on what you can broadcast or programs you can do?
Yes. Malas letras de las canciones.
Low art, offensive lyrics, song lyrics.
We have the same restrictions.
Todo aquello que desvirtúe la historia.
So all those things that detract from history. So we don't try to create an elite culture, but we do try to create a vanguard, an avant-garde. So much of our programming also has space for the community involvement. So, for example, we are forbidden to shut out the community from participating. And, in fact, we're charged with inviting them and welcoming them, encouraging them to take part in the program.
What if, Magda, you had an artist who had done a work that was critical of the government? Could you have that artist on air?
En Cuba es difícil que usted encuentre una persona que no
critique al gobierno. In Cuba, it's very difficult to find anyone who doesn't critique the government. The community is very active in its critique of politics. Cuba has a culture of debate and social participation that's difficult to understand because what you hear in the media is usually the opposite. All I can encourage you to do as a journalist is to come to Cuba and see for yourself.
El arte en Cuba suele ser muy crítico.
Art in Cuba tends to be very, very critical. And as you know, avant-garde art, by definition, is always at the forefront of social critique, social criticism.
You've also, while you've been in Montana, been touring some of our historical sites. I think you were in Helena, for example, lots of history there, and you'll be doing, I assume, the same here in Missoula. What's impressed you? What stood out to you about historic preservation here in Montana?
Primero debo decirle que me siento muy a gusto en Montana.
First of all, I should say that I'm very happy to be in Montana. Just like the impression I had of Vermont, I feel like people have a much more natural way of living in a permanent conversation with the natural world. People are very affable, and the cities have a much more humane scale. But I'm also very impressed with the sense of heritage and the community, the historic preservation community in the state. It's not a 500-year-old heritage like ours, but of course it's of great value. And it really is the expression of what it means to be a citizen of Montana. So I really enjoyed my conversations with folks in the historic preservation community.
Porque encontré un equipo de trabajo muy similar al nuestro. Es como llegar y visitar a la familia.
Their work is an awful lot like what we do, and so it's a little bit like coming home to visit family.
Well, we're very pleased to have had you in Montana, Magda, and I have been speaking with Magda Rasek-Aguirre, who is the Director of Communications for the Havana Office of the City Historian, involved in restoration work there and involved in promoting the arts and culture. And the translator for us today has been Raphael Chacon, professor at the University of Montana. Thank you both so much. Very fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was a very good time.
And in tonight's weather forecast for west of the Divide, tonight expect mostly clear skies with lows in the 40s. Tomorrow look for mostly sunny skies with highs in the upper 70s to mid 80s. Sunday calls for sunny skies in the morning, then becoming mostly clear. Highs will be in the mid 80s to lower 90s. For central Montana, tonight expect mostly clear skies. Lows will be around 45 to 55 degrees. Tomorrow look for sunny skies with highs around 70 to 80 degrees. Sunday calls for mostly clear skies. Highs will be around 80 to 90 degrees. And for southwest Montana, tonight expect mostly clear skies with lows in the 40s to upper 50s. Tomorrow look for sunny skies with highs in the upper 70s. Sunday calls for mostly clear skies. Highs will stay in the 80s. And now for the editorial comments of Olivia Riuta.
This week, children across the state headed back to school after another beautiful Montana summer. And while there are many kids who certainly wish that summer would just last forever, there are also kids in every community across our state who are excited to get back to the classroom, because back to school means getting enough to eat. Each school day, over 80,000 kids across Montana eat school lunch, with over half of those kids eligible for free or reduced lunch. One out of every five kids also eats breakfast at school. These nutrition programs are hugely important to low-income families who struggle to put food on the table every night. School nutrition is not only an important discussion because it's back to school time, but because if House Republicans get their way, in the next few weeks, they'll slash $40 billion from food stamps. And with those cuts, some Montana kids will automatically get kicked off of free and reduced lunch. 25%, a quarter of our kids here in Montana, are already living in poverty. The proposed cuts to food stamps are stunningly harsh. In a state and a country where so many individuals and families and communities are still pulling themselves out of the Great Recession, it's just wrong. Balancing any budget, state or federal, on the backs of those who are most vulnerable in our communities, whether they're low-income families, veterans, seniors, or kids, is always the wrong move. There is always a better choice than letting our neighbors go hungry. But to be clear, this is a political decision, a proving ground for congressional Republicans, about their commitment to the myth of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. I worked hard and made it, and so should you. Montana's representative, Steve Daines, he surely did make it. He's ranked the 41st most wealthy member of Congress, with a net worth of somewhere between $4.6 million and slightly less than $23 million. So while it might not be polite to talk about how much somebody makes, I don't think it's polite for the U.S. House to tell someone who can't find work and can't enroll in a job program because there isn't one in their rural community that they don't deserve to get food stamps or have enough to eat. So I sincerely hope that our lone voice in the U.S. House can recognize his great privilege and wealth and understand that not all families are so fortunate, to buck his caucus and do the right thing for Montanans by opposing cuts to food stamps. These $40 billion in cuts to food stamps, like so many of the proposed cuts to other programs that help the most vulnerable in our communities, has again been made under the banner of deficit reduction. And it's time we call their bluff. For starters, the way in which this food stamp cut is crafted is to incentivize states to kick folks off the program. It's a smart and a manipulative bill that splits the savings from removing people from the food stamp rolls and gives half of the money back to states. So, for example, in Montana, 12,000 individuals, families, seniors, and veterans are expected to lose access to benefits if the cuts go through. The average monthly SNAP benefit in Montana is $127.78, a total savings of $1.53 million a year. So the state of Montana would get $766,000. That's $750,000 to spend on anything they want. We shouldn't be building roads or filling budget gaps while people in our community go hungry. Not to mention that this is a bad way to legislate. It's also worth noting that as a country, we need to get over our obsession with deficit reduction. In the last 2 years, we've seen billions in reduction over the next decade, with 80% of that reduction coming from spending cuts and only 20% from revenue increases. And right now, we're seeing some of the fastest deficit reduction in our nation's history. Many economists believe spending cuts are only prolonging the economic downturn. The fear of the deficit is going to be mongered for as long as possible and used to justify deep and painful cuts to programs and services, with elected leaders simply shrugging their shoulders because they had no other option. These proposed cuts to food stamps are simply the next victim in a crusade to slash and burn our social safety net. But it has to stop. In our state, where one in every eight people relies on food stamps to get enough to eat, Congressman Daines must see through this partisan chatter and dare to do the right thing, dare to oppose cuts to food stamps. But he really needs to hear from us, because he'll be voting on these cuts in a matter of weeks. Please call him, introduce yourself, and ask him to oppose cuts to food stamps. If you yourself or someone you love has benefited from food stamps, tell him that too. You can reach Congressman Daines at 502-1435. And you can find out more information about these proposed cuts to food stamps at our website, montanawomenvote.org. I'm Olivia Ryuta with Montana Women Vote. Thanks for listening and have a fabulous holiday weekend.
Olivia Ryuta is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Jovetic. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.